Welcome to this episode of the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. I'm Miranda Schmalfus, an editor with Pharmaceutical Executive. Joining me on this episode is Michael Abrams, managing partner at Numeroff & Associates. Michael and I talk about pharmacy deserts and the main factors that are contributing to the closures of both large and independent pharmacies, what alternative solutions can help ensure continued access to medications for all Americans, particularly those in underserved communities, some potential long-term consequences if these pharmacy closures continue, and so much more. So without further ado, Michael, to begin our first question. With pharmacy closures becoming a national issue, what alternative solutions besides telehealth with mail delivery can help ensure continued access to medications for all Americans, particularly those in the underserved communities like you were just talking about?
Well, there are a lot of contributing factors to what's going on today. And there are a number of things that could be done. I think one would be pass some regulation that would improve the transparency of PBMs so that it would be apparent, for example, what kind of rebates they're getting from the manufacturers and where those rebates go. And how they arrive at the pricing that they are willing to give to the pharmacies for the drugs that they are then selling to patients. That would be a starting point. Another idea that I've seen out there would be that Medicaid programs in rural states make some allowance in the payment that they give to pharmacies that have light volume. And the sort of concession that they make is that, and filling a prescription warrants a fee all by itself, but they pay slightly higher fees to pharmacies that have light volume. And the point of that is to help reinforce their financial base so they don't go out of business. And so if you're going to do something to stop pharmacy deserts from happening, you got to stop pharmacies from closing their doors. They can't operate on negative margins. That just doesn't work. So ensuring that widening the availability of this sort of supplemental pricing for pharmacies that are eligible for these supplements would be a band-aid, admittedly, but it would be an improvement. Government at various levels could definitely incentivize pharmacies to move into areas that are classified as pharmacy deserts, whether it's through tax, write-offs or whatever. That would be a way to try and remedy the problem. Again, it doesn't get at the underlying issue, but it is something that, is worth considering. If there was a mandate for pharmacy networks being larger than they are, that might encourage PBMs to include pharmacies who might not otherwise be included and be in network, because being in network is the thing that makes the difference between, the revenue being there and the revenue not being there. So that's an idea. One more that I had that's worth considering is making Medicaid and Medicare prescriptions eligible for reimbursed home delivery. And then the pharmacy could arrange for the delivery, especially for local delivery, your local Lyft or Uber, and they could charge for that, and that would help them on the revenue side as well. I guess the last idea, that I had or that I've seen is pass legislation that would prohibit the PBMs from the practice that's known as spread pricing, which basically means that they buy a drug at one price from the manufacturer and then they sell it at a lower price to the pharmacy and they pocket the difference. And that difference should not necessarily go to the PBM. And one last item, and this is an issue, particularly for independent pharmacies who are truly under the thumb of the PBMs, and that is pass legislation on a national scale that would create an administrative way for individual pharmacies to process and resolve complaints by them against PBMs, because independent pharmacies don't have the resources to pursue, to take these guys to court. And so if you don't give them some better way to deal with the issues that come up, and there are many, then they're really kind of stuck. So that all of that would be a grab bag of ideas that might be pursued.
Absolutely. I remember going to like a small town pharmacy with my grandparents for their prescriptions growing up. And now all I see now are CVS or Walgreens, you know, it's all the big chains.
Right. Because they're the only ones that have the resource to hang in there in the face of very, very narrow margins. And even they are trimming the number of stores in their in their portfolios, and eliminating the ones that no longer are profitable.
Right. So pharmacy deserts were once a rural problem, right? So how will the nationwide trend of pharmacy closures disproportionately affect rural areas that were already dealing with it? And what specific challenges will these communities face in accessing medications?
Well, I think all of the factors that are operating to impact the profitability of pharmacies are operating in rural areas as well. And the result inevitably will be erosion of the number of pharmacies per resident, and longer commutes to the nearest pharmacy for the people who live there in rural areas. So some factors are even more serious in rural areas, things like the economically driven pullback of consumers. That shows up as less traffic in the store, fewer sales from the front of the store. And with fewer sales from the front of the store, it's very likely that you'll see fewer prescriptions filled, all because people are pulling back economically because they're feeling the effects of inflation. Many residents of rural areas already are forced to drive significant distances to obtain medical care. For those in communities that become pharmacy deserts, they will even more be that much more seriously handicapped.
Well, that is definitely sad news to hear.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned this a little bit before, but with several pharmacy chains of the bigger ones, like they're even experiencing closures, right? So
yeah.
can you elaborate
yeah.
on the main factors that are contributing to those closures, both for the large chains and the independent pharmacies that are, I would say, more significantly impacted?
Yeah. I read that there are more than 7,000 pharmacies have closed since 2019. And over half of them were independent pharmacies, which says since there are way more chain pharmacies than independent pharmacies, independents are paying a much higher price for what is going on. But some of the factors that feed into this problem, one of them, the very first ones, is inflation has raised overhead for all of these stores. I mean, these are businesses, and all the independent pharmacies, of course, are oftentimes family businesses, and one pharmacy is all they have. There are some that are multi-pharmacies, but basically it's nothing like the chains. So increased overhead driven by inflation, increased labor inflation is worth being called out separately, because as a consequence of inflation, the cost of getting help has gone up considerably. Theft is certainly a problem in urban environments. The cost just of trying to secure the goods that you're selling can be very consequential, and that's a factor. Pharmacies are seeing competition for non-pharmacy items from big box stores and online sellers, and that's cutting into their sales, and that's actually where more profit is generated than in the pharmacy in the prescription filling part of the business. Economic pressure on consumers and their subsequent pullback, as I've said earlier, is a factor, especially in less affluent areas. But by far the biggest factor is pressure by PBMs on reimbursement. They've been cutting back reimbursement for the products that the pharmacy dispenses for years now, to the point where by one authority, 8 out of 10 pharmaceutical products that are sold in the pharmacy actually yield negative margins. It costs the pharmacy more to acquire the drug than they get back in reimbursement. So, as I said earlier, you can't make a business on negative margins.
Yeah, no, you can't. And going back to the theft, I feel like every time I go into CVS or Walgreens, that more and more things that I'm just like, why is this behind a lock and key? And then there's always like one person working, and and then you kind of get frustrated, and then you just leave without the items that you need, unless you
Well,
actually are in an emergency,
I mean, what you're describing addresses both the theft problem and the labor cost problem. They skinny down their labor contingent to one person who minds the entire store, and some of these are enormous, So yeah, that is part of the problem. The largest PBMs really control a majority of the market, and as they have, leveraged their control of the market, they've demanded bigger rebates from the manufacturers, and they have lowered continuously the rebate, the reimbursements that they've been giving to the pharmacy for dispensing. And that is basically raising the bar for the profitability of a store. That's why even the large chains are trimming their portfolios, because there were stores that were, they were operating at a certain level before of margin, and now that the costs have gone up, they're below the target rate, so they close them up.
So, last question. Beyond the immediate access to medications, what are some potential long-term consequences for public health if these pharmacy closures are to continue?
Well, it's a good question, and it would be great if public health authorities would take a look at not only the short term, but the longer term view, because this is not a good thing for public health. I mean, lacking access to a pharmacy means that people who take maintenance medications, for example, for complex conditions, are more likely to stop taking them. And people not taking their medications means that there are a lot more instances or episodes of acute problems because they're not taking their medications. Things like blood sugar issues for diabetics who are not getting their insulin, as an example. So not only do you have more acute events, but you also have more longer term consequences, because the people that have these chronic conditions are not adequately treating their problems. And so those problems lead into longer chronic problems that ultimately cost the health system even more.
Yeah, we've had a lot of conversations around rationing doses, pill splitting, things like that to make their prescriptions last longer because they either can't afford it or honestly access to medication, certain medications. It's just very difficult. And I'm interested, and this is not on the list, obviously, but I'm curious to your thoughts going back to more populated areas versus rural, because it almost seems like, okay, well, if there's more people that live in this area, so if there's a necessity to, have some assistance, we're going to put it in the area that has more people, where rural areas are already, they've been struggling, so it's almost kind of like it's unfair to them that their needs aren't addressed first because they exist right now.
You're absolutely right. There's not an equitable solution here, but it's a huge waste, to take significant portions of the country just because they're rural and handicap them because they don't have adequate medical facilities, and I include here both pharmacies and hospitals.
Absolutely.
It's certainly a consequential, at least for young families who, for example, are where they might be at a childbearing point in their lives, moving into a town where the nearest hospital or labor and delivery operation is 30, 45, maybe an hour away, is a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And very scary. I mean, that's almost, I mean, they say location, location, location when you're buying a house. And certainly something that is, on my family's mind is, all right, where's the nearest hospital? Where's the nearest this? I mean, it's not just grocery stores. You want to know that medical care is near.
Right. And the other thing, some people say, well, there's always ordering your scripts by mail, and that can work out. But then again, there are people that take specialty meds that need refrigeration, and that doesn't work out so well by co when it's coming by US mail, especially when the temperature is 94 degrees out there.
And I have a lot of conversations around cold storage. I have one on Monday, and then I think in July, for my other brand that I work with, Pharmaceutical Commerce. So they deal with the supply chain aspect of that. So, like you said, there's no like clear solution and no equitable solution, but something's got to be done. I mean, losing 7,000 pharmacies since 2019, that's a very staggering statistic.
Well, I read that we're losing one pharmacy every day.
Oh, geez, that breaks my heart because you just think about the people that aren't, that they're not getting the medical care, the underserved communities. It breaks my heart because you don't, I mean, everybody obviously has stuff that they're going through, but to not have help, like I have three or four pharmacies, within arm's reach from where I live right now. To think that somebody's only option is something that is 45 minutes to an hour away is terrible because then you're at the mercy of that pharmacy having what you need in stock. And then you have to pay their prices. You have no choice.
And it's not only that, but it's the families that are impacted by the closure of their family business.
Yeah, it impacts so many people that this is a very important conversation that we just had, and I'm really excited to be able to get this to our audience.
Yes, I think I agree with you completely.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Farm Exec Podcast, where we take you behind the headlines to provide expert tips from industry leaders. Remember, you can always find us on the web at farmexec.com, on Twitter at farmexec, and on Instagram at farmexecutive. The views on this podcast do not reflect those of MJH Farm Exec's parent company or our advertisers. For editorial questions or to get in touch with our editors, please email us at farmexec@mjhlifesciences.com. And for sponsorship opportunities, please go to farmexec.com/advertise. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next time.